And here she is, Julia LeMay, and she's here to talk about a book that is intriguing, starting with its title, The Echo of Ice Letting Go. Welcome, Julie.
Good morning, Mike.
So you have been writing and doing poetry for some time.
I actually started writing when I was probably 8 or 9 years old.
Okay. I won't ask you how many years that means that you've been doing
many,
this.
Many,
many. Many, 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 many. What, as you think back to those days when you were 8 and 9 or before, what attracted you to poetry?
My mom read poetry to my brother and I when we were really small. So I grew up listening to Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven and Wordsworth and Whittier, sort of the traditional poets. And there's always something sort of mysterious and wonderful about it that attracted me and made me want to write poetry. And so I did off and on throughout the years and always read a lot of poetry.
Right, right. Then you have a book. We'll get to the book itself and its place and things. But from that early time to the present, a completed book, it's printed, it's sitting there. In between, have you written and published poetry?
I have. Probably about 10 years ago, I started writing more again. Once my children were grown, and publishing in small literary journals. And then in 2011, I retired after working at Matanuska Electric for 30 years.
Whoa.
And then I did, so that I could go on and get my master's in creative writing. And that's where the book came from. And then, of course, I started having to produce more poetry with a deadline, and that's kind of where how the book came to be.
And how was that to have a deadline as opposed to letting the muse?
My mom always says that she doesn't work better under a deadline. It's the only time she works. So I think I tend to be a bit that way. And sometimes it can be difficult, but other times it actually prompts a lot more to happen. So it's kind of good. And I've set deadlines with other people at times when I didn't have an outside deadline, like I promised them. My daughter, Aeon Ivy, when she was working on The Snow Child, she was giving me a chapter a week, and I was giving her a poem or two a week. And so we had built in this deadline, which kind of helped us to move along.
Well, very good. Very good. We have, on the station, had the great pleasure of having other poets here, David Cheesham, next door, and Greg Gussie, and others, and we have explored their perspective about what poetry is as a form of expression, as compared to, typically we say, prose and poetry. How would you sum up your understanding? Here, this is a simple question. Of what poetry really is, the essence of it, for you.
Well, I feel like for me, and it is hard to, you know, I mean, people with a lot more education and experience than me argue about the points of what makes something a poem versus not.
Uh-huh.
But for me, poetry feels very pure, very boiled down. There's not a lot of superfluous language in there. And I like that. I kind of like the purity of it, the strictness of what you're doing, following certain rules of sound and meter, and I like that. I enjoy the discipline of it.
Okay. All right. Now, this book is out, we say. It's been published and printed, and it's available. And we're, I'll mention this right now, we're headed toward an evening with you and your daughter, Eowyn, at Turkey Red on Friday, this Friday coming up.
Yes, I'm so looking forward to it. I'm doing a book signing at Fireside from 4 to 6, and then at 6 p.m. we're doing a dinner at Turkey Red, and then Eowyn and I will be doing a book talk where we talk about some of the poems and sort of the path to publication.
Okay, all right. So the title... titles, I understand, are important and sometimes help define the essence of the book. How did you come about this title?
My book is published with the University of Alaska Press, and one of the during the process, they have academic reviewers, and one of them said, "I find the book really surprising, but I don't like the title." You know, it's kind of so. I thought, well, I need to come up with a new title because I wasn't really all that keen on what I had. So I started a big list of going through my poems and finding lines that I liked that I felt were sort of representative of the book. And this was the title that I came up with. Then I worried about the cover because I, you know, of course they started sending me things like rivers and glaciers. And I thought, no, everybody's going to think this is, you know, nature poetry or environmental poetry. And really the echo of ice letting go is a metaphor. It's not something literal. So I ended up with this wonderful, it's a painting by Ian Grant who lives in Juneau, and it's called Sockeye Rising. And it's sort of an abstract of something in the natural world, which was exactly what I was looking for.
I can tell you, I'm looking at the cover, and it's provocative in the sense that it has a colorful, but it also is not so specific in what is there that I can say, oh, it's more leading me to imagine things than anything else, right?
That was absolutely the intent, Mike. I wanted it to create a question for someone who looked at it. What is this about?
Okay.
So absolutely glad we succeeded.
So as seems appropriate, is there a short passage of some sort or poem that you could read that would give a potential reader and the listener today a chance to understand what we're talking about?
Well, I think I would like to read the first poem because I think it's sort of, although some of the poems are more less abstract than this one, it sort of sets the tone, I think, for what the book is about.
Okay.
What I'm exploring in this book. And it's called Tosca Lived a Good Life. Tosca lived a good life. Tosca on her knees sings of a good life, of her great love, why it should exempt her from suffering. Maybe love is just a con man's con, faith cobbled with misery. Life is pregnant with death, a prayer dead on the altar, just sad fish, sad fish. The Madonna in her mantle sings a death song to the sky, and is still beautiful. I ride with sadness. I am ripe with sorrow. I am perched. I am hanging, sir. What will this seat cost me?
Whoa. Okay. I'm realizing that this is a few words. I'm not sure how many there are there.
Not many.
Not many words. But I personally, in my experience of hearing and reading poetry has been that, as you've said earlier, a few words can somehow capture, create a whole set of feelings. I'm hearing them and I'm saying, there's a few words that have been chosen, put together, and there's we could talk a long time about that one poem.
Well, I think everyone has a different level of that they can tolerate ambiguity, and that's sort of the balance in a poem is how direct and how ambiguous.
Right.
If it's too ambiguous, some people feel like there's nothing to hold on to, they don't understand it. If it's too direct, then people feel like they're being beat over the head. And I think we all have a different tolerance for that. And some of the poems in the book are much more direct, especially the poems about being out in nature. But this sort of, I feel, sort of sets the stage for what the book explores. The poem came out of seeing my daughter, granddaughter Grace, sing in the children's choir for Tosca.
Okay.
And there's a scene in there, the aria, where Tosca sings Visi d'arte, visi d'amore. I live for art. I live for love. And basically, Tosca's asking this question, which I think can be common in the human experience, which is, hey, I've been a good person. How come all this terrible stuff is happening to me? And so I think as we deal with difficulty in life, sometimes that question comes up, what's the meaning of this? How do I deal with this? How do I find faith and beauty in the world in spite of the challenges? And that's sort of what I'm attempting to explore with the poems in this book.
Well, if this first one is, and you said, you know, you have a first poem here in the book. There's a range across being direct and moving beyond that. How did you know that the book was done?
Great question. I actually, this is not the book that I finished in my MFA program.
Okay.
And when I was done with it, my mentor, who's head of the poetry department at Antioch University, Los Angeles, I did a low residency program there, which meant I went down twice a year for 2 weeks, and then everything else was by email and online. She said to me, she said, I think you have a really good book here, but it's really quiet, and I'm not sure for a first book it's going to grab anybody's attention. So she said, I suggest you send it out and you keep working on it. She said, I think your newer work has more tension to it, and I think you just keep adding new poems. And so I did that and sent it out over a year and a half to 2 years to multiple places. And then when I felt like, I think it's as done as it's going to be, I think I feel finished with it, and it had changed quite a bit, then I sent it to University of Alaska to Peggy Shoemaker, who's the editor for the Alaska Literary Series. And thank goodness Peggy said yes, and we'll publish your book. Yeah, I was astonished and grateful.
Well, you obviously have a feeling associated with that. Did you get a phone call or a letter that, or an email that told you this? What?
I had actually sent her an email and sent it off, and she said, it'll be a while before I can get to it. I have a lot of other projects before yours. And I remember I woke up and I saw an email from Peggy, and it had been months, like she had told me it would be. And it said something to the effect, I could read on my email from my phone, at long last, I've read your powerful poems or your rich poems or something like that. And I couldn't read the rest of it. And I thought, you know, I'm going to get up and shower and have a cup of coffee and be like, guarded against the day, because when she says, but I'm not going to be able to handle it. So I had to be very galvanized to read the email. And then when she said, and we want to publish it, I was jumping around and woohoo.
Isn't that amazing? I've had a few experiences like that, not so much with a book, but I'm suspecting that listeners would too, about wanting some, you know, applying for, doing whatever, and then when it comes through, there's that moment of like almost a pause before it hits.
It was. I felt like that maybe my best opportunity would be possibly with the University of Alaska Press. Mm-hmm. But as with anything, oftentimes you have one shot. You know, it's you send it off once, and it's not like you get to send it off multiple times to them. So I was really excited. And also, over the years, I've just seen the work that they've done with other poets' books and other authors, and they just do a great job. So I was real excited to work with them, and they have been amazing.
So while you're still in the glow of this one, finished it and we're talking about it, any inklings of a further work or what you can do now that you have this sort of with you?
I have what's called in poetry a chapbook, which is, you know, usually less than 40 pages, usually like around 20.
Right.
Mine's only at about 12 now, and it's all about Tibet, because I've spent a lot of time there over the last 10 years. I've been there 3 or 4 times. And they're all poems about Tibet. And I kind of would like to keep that as a chapbook, as a small onto itself book. I'm also working on a lot of other poems, as always, but there's not enough there to even start thinking about a book. I'm just kind of writing and sending them out to various literary journals to see if I can publish them. And just, you know, at some point there'll be enough there to start looking at. We'll just come together to be a book again.
And given your experience, starting way back when and through to this particular book, any comments you can share with other people that are perhaps younger along the trail of doing their poetry?
I think the biggest thing that, and I've talked to quite a few people about this, both, you know, people, it, you know, my level of experience and people much, much more experienced. And the biggest thing is reading poets and trying to find people who aren't necessarily who you would normally find. Finding different writers, writers in translation, people from different cultural backgrounds, people with different aesthetic. You know, if you tend to write very concretely, find somebody that's very, very abstract, just to get a wide range of experience in what you're reading. You know, go to poetry readings, just get exposed to a lot, and keep writing, and send off to journals. One of my mentors said, don't even think about publishing a book until you get about 25% of those poems published in literary journals, so that you kind of have a base of readership. There's some people out there that know your work. So that in itself is a job that with a lot of rejection, of course. I was a poetry editor for the literary journal at Antioch, and we would get, over several month period, about 1,200 poems, and we could publish 10 to 15.
Oh, okay.
So that gave me some perspective for my expectation on whether someone was going to accept my poem or not for publication. It's not good odds.
Okay, thank you. Mike Malevsky here. We've been talking with Julie LeMay, whose new book of poetry will be available on Friday at a book signing. Farside Books, starting about 4, did you say?
4, yes.
Yep. And then she'll be at dinner with a chance to meet and ask questions beyond the ones we've discussed here. Julie, any last comments before we finish up?
No, I'm just really grateful to Farside Books for, it was my dream to have a book release party and have it at Farside Books, and I'm so grateful to David and Melissa and everyone there for helping make that happen, and grateful to you guys for having me here today. Thank you.
Right. And the book, The Echo of Ice Letting Go. Thank you.
Thank you.